Support for today's show comes from Deloitte. What does the future look like? By melding business acumen and innovative technology, Deloitte can help you build the future only you can imagine. They can help engineer solutions for your business reality today and your vision for tomorrow, to get you to a world where you don't just dream it, you build it. See how you can engineer advantage with Deloitte at deloitte.com/us/engineeringadvantage.
Support for Pivot comes from ServiceNow. By now, you've probably heard about AI. You might even be sick of hearing about it. But despite all the hype, it's not always clear how AI can help your business. ServiceNow has some ideas. With their intelligent platform, they can put AI to work across your company, improving customer experiences, helping non-coders code, accelerating your IT team's productivity, and resolving HR cases faster. So work can actually work better for everyone. So stop the hype and start putting AI to work. Go to servicenow.com/genAI to see why the world works with ServiceNow.
Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher, and I have a doctorate. Thank you.
What? I mean, you got an honorary doctorate?
Commencement address at Cooper Union, and they gave me an honorary doctorate. And so you may call me Dr. Swisher now.
Dr. Swisher. No, your family now has two doctors.
Yeah, exactly. Mine's a fake one, but there I am. I don't have a PhD or anything near it. I have a master's degree, but certainly not a PhD.
People all the time introduce me in media as doctor because they assume every professor has a PhD.
Oh, really? Yeah,
which I don't, just to be clear.
Yeah.
How was that? How did your commencement speech go?
It was great. You know, I have to tell you, Scott, you want to feel better about the world, meet young people, meet with young people.
100% agree.
The student who was giving the address was astonishing. Mm-hmm. Just a great speech. They are honest about things, but hopeful, and yet at the same time, not stupid. He talked about how he hates the word resilient and being referred to as resilient, which mm-hmm. I agree with. You know what I mean? Like as if you get used to being under siege. And so he was great. It was great. And the woman who runs Cooper Union, it's a small but really interesting school right in the heart of the East Village. And it sort of combines art and science. And so there's architecture, there's art, there's lots of engineers, mostly engineers. But it sort of reminds me of that Steve Jobs idea of art and science together. And you can see it in action. I just was super impressed. It used to give every student free tuition. They had some setbacks and they're trying to get back to that now. So the students are.
Was this your first speaking engagement at a commencement?
Yes. I did a high school commencement once. But
by the way, that's not me wanting to know about you. That's me prompting you to ask me if I've ever spoken
at a
commencement.
Did you ever speak at a high any kind of commencement, any kind of transition of people to a next thing?
I've spoken at one college commencement. Do you want to guess where and when it was?
I would, if they were smart, UCLA, because you went there, but Florida State University.
FSU.
Yeah.
I was the student speaker at the Berkeley commencement.
Oh, my goodness. When you went there?
That's a real flex.
Wow. You were elected then, just like this kid that was so amazing at Cooper Union. Were you elected by your peers?
I wasn't elected. Oh, I guess I was selected. They came up to me. Someone from student government came up and said, we'd like you to be the commencement speaker.
Oh, wow. Yeah, because usually they get selected now in a vote or competition. Wow, that's great. What did you say? Let me hear a very short version.
Oh, it was all about my mom. My mom was sick.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very emotionally manipulative.
No, but it was probably heartfelt. That's called heartfelt, Scott. It was probably true. Did you have hair at the time?
A lot of hair. I had good hair. As a matter of fact,
did you know how
I got to Berkeley? My mode of transportation was a skateboard and a ponytail. I had a ponytail in graduate school.
Man.
That was a good look. That's how you lose your virginity at 19. Have a ponytail and a skateboard. The skateboard actually probably helped.
Yeah, you would probably be a good commencement speaker now, I would think. You're very inspirational. Yeah. I told you, Lou, you helped Alex, for example. You inspired him. And Louis wants to talk to you about your man book. He has thoughts about men
and
his friends and friendship. And he's very much someone who wants men to be more emotional friends.
We are. I think a lot of young men are mistaking friends for real friendship.
That's right.
You know, we're We're online. I mean, when I first moved to New York, I didn't have friends. I had wingmen. I'm like, I'm new to New York. I need to go out. I need partners in crime. But I didn't really appreciate what it meant to invest in and receive friendship. And I don't think, I don't think men in general are very good at it.
This is what Louis was talking about. And he's made some other friends that are more friends. And, you know, he struggles with it because he's someone who is wants an emotional friendships with men, like with, and he wants more from his friends. He wants to expect more from his friends than just, hey, dude, let's drink or let's go to a strip club or whatever. It was a very, and I said, you need to talk to Scott Galloway about this because it was very, this is, I think, what you're writing about a little bit.
That's
in his book. So anyway, he has some thoughts. He has some thoughts he'd like to share with you.
Well, good. If we run out of ideas, we'll turn to his doctorate mother.
You have to call me Dr. Swisher.
Dr. Swisher.
Yeah. Dr. Swisher is in the house. Yeah, it was great. We have a lot to talk about. Lots has gone on, especially including last night. And of course, the HBO Max rebrand, which you've been having a good time talking about.
Oh my God.
But today we have so much. I want to get to that rebrand first. But first, just so you know, we're going to talk today about Ron DeSantis and the Elon Musk experience, a failure to launch, as they're calling it, or disaster. Get it? DeSantis disaster. The Surgeon General says social media is a new smoking, and we'll take a listener question about the HBO Max rebrand. So we're going to get to that in a minute. But I want to start with something that's super disturbing to me, and it's one of the many things, speaking of Ron DeSantis, students at Florida Elementary School can no longer read the poem that Amanda Gorman read at President Biden's inauguration. It was a beautiful poem. The school limited access to the poem after a single complaint from a single parent. The parent complained the poem is, quote, not educational and contains, quote, indirect hate speech while misidentifying the author as Oprah Winfrey. Last week, Governor DeSantis signed into law a requirement the schools pull challenge books within 5 days of receiving complaints. This is ridiculous. Let's listen to part of the poem the parent pointed out.
Wade, we've braved the belly of the beast. We've learned that quiet isn't always peace. In the norms and notions of what just is, isn't always just is. And yet the dawn is ours before we knew it. Somehow we do it. Somehow we've weathered and witnessed a nation that isn't broken, but simply unfinished.
Well, she's so impressive. That was impressive. I remember that. It was very moving. LGBT book bans are increasingly common, but a report by the Washington Post found that a majority came from just 11 people. 11 people in our nation are doing this. The serial complaint filers accounted for 6% of all challengers, but were responsible for 60% of all filings. It's a loud group. And just in time for Pride Month, I'll note, Target will remove some of its LGBTQ plus merchandise after backlash threatened its workers' safety. The retail has featured Pride products in June for more than a decade.
Well, if you think about what we have now, a campaign conducted by certain parents and student unions to ceremonially ban books targeted are those seen as subversive or representing ideologies opposed to a certain viewpoint, and books that are mostly written about a lot about coming of age, about views that are contrary to kind of what you will call this conservative American Christianity. Now, what I just said there is the exact description, if you go to Wikipedia and read the first paragraph, but take out the word Nazi, what I just read is how Wikipedia describes the Nazi book burnings. And to not call on the past around how, and immediately say to yourself, this is how it all starts.
Yeah.
They're targeting, it's thinly veiled. If she were a white poet whose parents lived in Alabama and she drove a pickup truck, would they have banned the poem? This is such thinly veiled bigotry and weirdness. And there's not enough people who are old enough or unfortunately know a World War II veteran or a Holocaust survivor, and then you have the world's most powerful man saying to a famous kind of target of anti-Semitism, that he hates humanity.
Yeah.
And we have essentially these book burnings, but they can't burn books anymore because they're digital, so they just ban them. It's just like, folks, you know, society, Western society has been here before, and the story doesn't end well.
It's such a small group of people. That's, you know, right-wing commentator and dickless wonder Matt Walsh tweeted about his movement, "We can't boycott every woke company, but we can pick one, it hardly matters which, and target it with ruthless boycott campaign, claim one scalp, and then move on to the next." First of all, I don't even want to say about a person like this. He's the one that always attacks trans people. He's really quite, I don't even know what to say about him. The less said, the better. Anyway, it's a very strange thing that so few people are involved in this. And it's something you talk about a lot, which is the intolerant minority, and not even just a minority of the minority is doing this. And that's what you have to keep in mind. Most people sort of shrug their shoulders. There was a great video of I think it was a Target employee, and she's like, "There's nothing wrong with this pride stuff." Like, she was handling it well, like, and she was sort of perplexed. And this guy was being aggressive at her, and like, this is, you know, pedo and grooming and all this stuff. And she handled it beautifully, but was completely like, "Can I help you with something? Do you want to buy something? Please leave me alone." That kind of stuff. So it's weird. It's just most people are like, "What are you talking about, you stupid person?" kind of stuff.
Well, I think, and I think it's a lesson for both sides, because, I mean, at Netflix, when people were upset about what Dave Chappelle was saying, Ted Sarandos came out and said, "Words are not violence. If this offends you, and pushing the boundaries, letting comics push the boundaries of saying uncomfortable things offends you, you shouldn't work here." And I think that at the same time, school districts and the CEO of Target needs to say, if this offends you, you shouldn't shop here. So there's more of it from the far right, but some, just to be fair, some of those dangerous things around.
Come on, Scott, you're doing it again. It's all from the right now, against trans people, against gay people, against black people. This is not, you're not seeing the left-wing person march into a Chick-fil-A and saying, "You're all too religious." You don't see it. It doesn't happen. Or let's have legislation against, you know, the people of Hobby Lobby. It's just not happening.
Let me be clear. It's much more dangerous. It's much more cruel from the right. But there is still an emerging narrative and a temptation on both sides of the polls to try and shame people and deny them of their right to catalyze a conversation when you don't agree with them. And that if you don't adopt the narrative that you are a bad person and someone that is dangerous. That happens from both sides, Kara.
Yes, but on one side, it is just words, as you say, and the other, it's action. It's actual action.
That's true. On the far left, they're not passing legislation. Yeah, I agree.
It's just, there's a very big difference here. And they've gotten taken this
book.
You're
doing it again.
You're doing it again. I'm calling Christiane Amanpour so we can discuss this, because she said both sides is not neutral.
You know, ever since you got your doctorate, you're unbearable.
That's Dr. Swisher to you, and the doctor is in and declaring you sick in the head. Anyway, this is going to go on, because this is how they operate on the fringes and into the middle, trying to cause us all so much divisiveness. And let me just say, Amanda Gorman, your poem was beautiful and deserves widespread reading. It probably will sell a lot more copies because these imbeciles target it. Anyway, in tech news, Meta will sell Giphy. This is interesting, to Shutterstock for $53 million. That's the first time it had to sell off an asset because of antitrust regulations. It originally bought it for $300 million, was ordered by UK competition authorities to divest. They'd fought it for a bit. You know, I guess it's not working for them. And they had to divest it anyway in this year of efficiency and begin another round of layoffs Wednesday, by the way, targeting 10,000 business employees. Lost a lot of money here. Well, that's the way it goes. I think they probably were like, well, let's just move along.
Okay, we bought something, it didn't work. It's an easy give. I was never entirely sure. I guess I'm trying to go back to the original justification for purchasing it for $500 million, that if you have an attribute.
Explain what Giphy is for people so they don't know.
It's essentially, it's those wonderful little videos or memes that you can insert into a tweet or a piece of online content. But it's a way of differentiating a piece of content, and it's really fun and it's really interesting. And if you type in Kara Swisher commencement speech, I don't know what you get. That would be interesting.
Nothing. It doesn't show up on Twitter, FYI. But go ahead.
But I guess the idea was, if we go vertical and we own this media company that gives differentiates our content versus content posted on another platform. But I guess they were never able to justify, or they were worried about raising any trust flags if they didn't let people post use Giphy for other platforms. Because my understanding is I can go on Giphy and post it on other platforms. So, but yeah, 90% decline, destruction in value. Good for, I mean, the good employees at Giphy built something really cool, and they had Facebook shareholders overpay for it by 10x.
Yeah, and there we have it. And then move along. It's probably fine at Shutterstock. Those things are, I use them all the time. I like them.
You love them. You went on a Giphy orgy this morning with your review of the DeSantis thing, which we'll come back to.
I thought it was a pretty good review. That was a pretty good assessment. If I say so, it was very doctoral. I'm thinking of changing it to a doctorate on fuck-ups. We'll talk about that in a minute. Jack Sweeney, the man who ran a Twitter account tracking Elon Musk's private jet, is now focused on Governor Ron DeSantis' move. Ron DeSantis uses a lot of people's private planes, by the way. Users can now follow the flight paths of DeSantis' private plane on DeSantis Jet on Twitter. The account displays public flight data with a 24-hour delay. That keeps it in line with Twitter's rules. Last December, Twitter banned the Elon Jet account for posting coordinates in near real time. This may be the only way that voters see the governor's travel. Earlier this month, DeSantis signed a law protecting travel records of state leaders from public disclosure. How ridiculous. Democrats have criticized the bill. Everybody should, saying it doesn't allow for transparency and allows donors to have secret influence ahead of a presidential campaign. That law really perplexed me. Whether or not some of these travels should be public, if taxpayers are paying in a lot of places, the governor uses private jets and it turns it into a Clarence Thomas situation. So what do you think about that?
I think you need to separate. I think if you're flying, if you're using public transportation that's taxpayer funded, there should be a different set of transparency requirements than if you're a private individual flying your own plane. And where I do have sympathy for Elon.
But if he's using rich people's planes and they're like in-kind donations to go to campaign events, that's
My understanding is the law is that you have to, or it used to be, you had to document that donation as a campaign contribution, and then it becomes public domain. Where I'm headed is, I'm not sure we should be allowed to track people by their license plate. If you, the tolls, people pay tolls on highways. That's technically somewhere. Someone could probably reverse engineer it and find your traffic. If you can track someone's plane, shouldn't you be able to track them in their car?
Yeah.
So I'm not sure you should be able to track someone by plane. The head of the finance department at NYU Stern, who's brilliant, his name's David Yermak, and he did this fantastic research 10, 15 years ago where, because it's public information, he was tracking the tail numbers of CEOs.
Yeah.
And he found that when CEOs were traveling to a vacation spot the day after their earnings, and you could see where they were planning to go with the flight manifest, it meant that the earnings were going to be positive.
Oh, wow.
Because if a guy's headed to Anguilla the day after his earnings, it means he's about
good
to
times.
Post good numbers.
Yeah.
And it was just such amazing research. But anyways, reverse engineering it to here, I don't know if that should be public domain if you're a private citizen flying
your own
private
plane. I get your point. I see your point there. I do. I think it's, people are going to do this anyway, and this is sort of stunty and pranky at rich people. It could be dangerous, but if it's 24 hours, I don't care. If it's 24 hours, if they feel, it's like reporters digging up. He flew here and then flew there. People that are public servants really do need to say where they get their private planes from. It seems like most people would be like,
And we get to say Elizabeth Warren while she, engages in class warfare is using private jets to get places.
Yeah.
I think that's fun. I think that should be open season.
Yeah, absolutely. And it often is. It is an attack vector. But in this case, Ron, you're such a chode. Anyway, and speaking of a chode, let's get to our first big story. On Wednesday, Governor Ron DeSantis officially kicked off his campaign for the presidency in a Twitter space with Elon Musk. But like a SpaceX rocket launch, things didn't go quite as planned. Failure to launch. The event started late, had technical difficulties, and drew fewer than 600,000 listeners before crashing completely. It relaunched a few minutes later and had several different problems. People kept getting thrown off and this and that. Ran for about an hour, but didn't ever regain its full audience. People are pegging it at 150 to 200,000 maybe at concurrent users. And of course, the Twitter people are like, oh, there's millions, but they're trying to do it over time. Twitter users called the event a disaster. Get it, DeSantis. So did Trump and others. And everyone took advantage of it. Trump had funny tweets. Biden had funny tweets. Jon Stewart had funny tweets. Musk backer Jason Calacanis said it was a DDoS attack, maybe. And no evidence, just made it up. Well, they made up a lot of things, saying this was the biggest online event. And then everyone posted what the actual biggest online events, live events were. BuzzFeed's Exploding Watermelon in 2016 attracted more than double. And Travis Scott's Fortnite concert was 12 million. So there's lots and lots of other things that have been successful. He would have been better doing an event that everybody covered and then going on Fox. It was tiny, tiny, tiny audience for this thing, and also audio disaster. So any thoughts?
I do have thoughts, but I want you to go first here because you wrote what I thought was a really interesting tweet storm. I want your take and then I'll respond.
Well, let me go over it very quickly. I was reacting to something Linda Yaccarino wrote, which she talked about as a rare and unscripted.
Guess, she thought it was a success. I'm just going to go out on a limb here.
She didn't mention any of the problems. You know, she said things like, you know, kind of empty words. Freedom of speech is priceless. No one doesn't have freedom of speech here. Rare and unscripted conversation. It was completely scripted. But, you know, she liked it. She's going to be CEO there. I think if you got her with a whiskey, she wouldn't say that. And I made the point that if she was running NBC at the time and the cameras fell off, she'd be apologizing and giving givebacks to advertisers right away. Like, she'd be wondering, like, what the fuck happened here? That's the kind of person she was. And not pretending it was anything else. She has to do that, right? So, but she definitely would be the one calming down advertisers and not using her credibility to not be honest about this business performance, because they're trying to become a media company, right? This company's trying to become a media company, and it was a fuck up. That's just what it was. And it also took the attention away from DeSantis, because the medium was the message, right? This medium doesn't work. When they did get down to it, David Sachs, who was the moderator, called him a junior varsity moderator, and Elon talked more about themselves and not DeSantis. And he was sort of, it was like a bad, I think Joe Rogan's very talented and it's very entertaining. This was like Joe Rogan on a really bad night. Then they kept attacking the press. That's their favorite thing. They seem obsessed with calling us irrelevant and then never stopping to talk about the media, which is weird. I like unscripted conversations. I like when they're like people get to talk. I had a Twitter Spaces. Mine always had glitch problems and they were very small in comparison. And it wasn't that much smaller than this, actually. You know, when this stuff happens, it's not good. I was comparing it to my Mark Zuckerberg interview with Walt, where he sweat. That wasn't a good interview. He sweat. It was bad. It didn't say anything. It had no insight. It was just sad. Okay, he gets nervous, I suppose, but he went on to build the biggest company ever. So what? If they really want to do media and they don't have to be reporters, they have to do a better job. They have to be prepared. The tech has to work and they have to stop like saying everything was great.
First off, I'd like to announce that I'm running for the open Senate seat of Florida and I'm using the premier technology, escalator. I'm going to come down an escalator or I'm going to launch it on Foursquare and a dozen people showed up and crashed the site. Look, the bottom line is this was really bad for the governor because one, anytime you get anywhere near Elon Musk, he thinks he's God. And he, the first 30 minutes, any question he would turn to himself and talk about Twitter.
Yeah.
In addition, it was bad for Musk because do you really want to get in a car from the guy who brings you, I can't host a podcast?
Yeah.
The technology glitches here. And it was the worst of both worlds. They tried to pretend it was unscripted. It clearly wasn't. They had the governor. No. They had
anything good.
They had a series of bait questions from people, including someone who's supposedly going to be a possible VP candidate. And the story today isn't about any the themes he talked about. It isn't about him. The story today is just about what a fuck up it was.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about Governor DeSantis and his office is, to date, they have been very disciplined about message.
Well, not to date. Since this presidential campaign, I think they've fucked up with the Disney thing. They've done a series of fuck-ups.
His comms group, I don't agree with the message, but they've been very disciplined around kind of format and venue. It was such a missed opportunity because the reality is, and we don't like to say this on the left, Florida is an enormous success story. And if he'd gone to Tampa, St. Pete, when you go to cities in Florida right now, you're surprised at the upside. Mm-hmm. You go to Tampa, St. Pete, and you go to the Dolly Museum, and you're like, Jesus, this is a great city. You go to Orlando, you see the economic vibrancy. You go to Miami with even some of the impact problems it has. It's still the coolest city in Latin America, and it happens to be in America. I mean, Florida is, there's just no getting around it.
I don't know why he didn't focus on that.
It's a success story. He should have done an Amy Klobuchar-like announcement that was very Florida. He should have done it from a great success story in Florida. And he has a lot to work with. And the reason why he's going to be a formidable candidate is there's just no getting around it. Florida's doing really well on most dimensions. Now, in terms of social
Except
justice.
Except for the book banning, but go ahead.
Thank you for that, Dr. Swisher.
Anytime.
For people on the ground and living in Florida, they're like, I'm getting a great value here. I have a nice quality of life. I have low crime. I have good schools. And by the way, I pay no state taxes. You know, that's just a winning value proposition. But instead of focusing on his assets, he travels to Elon Musk on a platform that breaks down. I mean, that's the story today, was everything that went wrong. So this was this was a real misstep because he does have a lot to work with.
I'm not so sure. There's a lot of problems in Florida, but by the way, and there's been lots of documentation. But fine, it's fine. It's a very vibrant state. So are many states. But he does. He should be leaning into his strengths, no question. He cannot help. You know, I think he's probably doing this so he can suck up to him and get money from donors, you know, like Elon and his whole group of people around him. That's would be my assumption. Being a lapdog to a billionaire is not a great look for someone who's supposed to be strong. I think he's been messing up a lot with the Disney thing. Unforced error. And it gives people like Trump, who is so skilled at this, he had stuff out immediately and it was funny. You know what I mean? It was well done. And it was a good like slap-a-do on this guy. And he can continue. And now they've got a new name, Disaster, right? They've got a new, he finally found it wasn't Meatball Ron. It wasn't DeSanctimonious. It's Disaster. And so he was doing all this talking about, they weren't challenging him. And then we had to hear what David Sachs and Elon Musk think about things. They need to stop talking, those two.
Agreed. But this is the governor's shot and his opportunity. Mm-hmm. And that is, we consistently overestimate ideological issues and social issues impact on people when they go in the voting booth, and we underestimate quality of life issues. And there's just a large swath of Americans that will vote for whoever they think is going to put more money in their
pockets. That's correct.
And then, I don't know if you remember Mayor Frank Jordan, remember him? In San Francisco? Rudy Giuliani, you know, incandescent blue cities. And once every 20 or 30 years, the quality of life gets so bad that when they vote a quote-unquote inequality of life person. There are a lot of states and cities that post-COVID, the quality of life has taken a big hit. And that's what the governor should be focusing on.
Don't know why he's not. Why is he hanging out with Elon?
You know, Elon does get, he probably thought we're going to get so much attention. It's a new medium.
For Elon.
Agreed. But you can see why they thought this would be a good idea. The execution here was abysmal. I mean, it did. Yeah. It sounded like a podcast in 2012 where they said, we're going to try this new thing called podcasting. Bear with us.
Yeah. But I think when you stand next to Elon, no one's looking at you. They're looking at this.
He's a black hole of attention.
Attention, exactly. One of the things that's interesting is right-wing personalities, of course. And then it was sad when they're trying to say it was good. Just say it was bad. Just please stop. And then they were all hurt about it. Like, oh, the media is going crazy. We're like, no, we're just pointing out you suck. Right-wing personalities are going all in on Twitter. This week, the Daily Wire announced it'll upload full episodes of his podcast to Twitter, which Elon was asking them to do. Tucker Carlson still plans to host a show. He reportedly is rebuilding his home studio after Fox News repossessed the set and equipment. God, it costs cost them more to go get it than the stuff costs. Oh, God. You know, there's a lot of right-wing creators going there, but its brand reputation just took a massive hit. It's right now the Axios Harris brand reputation poll found that Twitter placed 97th out of 100 companies. I don't know what the last three were, but even though the world's biggest ad agency said it no longer considers Twitter to be a, quote, high-risk platform for advertisers. But that's just because they're giving Linda a chance.
Like the whole announcement, it was a really good idea. It could have been a win for both of them if it had been well produced. This was a good idea for Twitter. It was a good idea for DeSantis. The execution was, I would be furious if I were the DeSantis folks, and I would be enraged if I were Musk. He looks, wait, you want me? I'm sorry, you're trying to create autonomous driving technology and you can't do a fucking podcast?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
apparently there wasn't, I'm excited to hear, read the reporting out of this. Apparently there wasn't much planning. I can tell you when they had lots of people, it was always glitchy. Like what? Hello? What? Hang up, rehang up. You've been on those things with me when I did them.
There was 200,000 people supposedly that listened to it that were stuck around for the 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. What you and I are doing right now, we'll have more people listen.
Yeah. Ron, come on our show.
So the DeSantis announcement gets fewer people than the announcement of Kara Swisher's doctorate.
Yes, yes. He should have partnered. They should have partnered with news outlets. Just their constant vituperative hatred of the media. And of course, that means they're obsessed with the media is really getting in their way. Just build something good. Just build a good product.
And in contrast to that, as much as this was a disaster for for DeSantis, you know, it was a victory, was Trump on CNN. He just owned him. He just owned them. And it was, I hate to say it, it was really...
He's the OG. OG on that stuff.
He just totally manipulated the medium. And by the way, they had an intelligent person trying their best to fact check a serial liar. They filled the audience with sycophants. And this was just, it was just, this is a shit show. 1984 called and wants its technology back.
Honestly, someone tweeted that DeSantis is hoping, waiting around the basket, that Trump goes to jail. That's what would be his end, right? But I think Trump could beat him from jail easily.
From jail?
With his hands tied, shackled behind his back.
I actually think the governor's a more formidable candidate than people are saying right now. I used to think, I was thinking maybe he's done. I actually think he's got a lot of
all right, Mr. Beto O'Rourke's boyfriend. Okay, we'll see how that works out. I do not.
Hello, Dreamy.
I think. Hello, Dreamy. That was a nice pick. And then who'd you pick after that? And who did Kara pick the whole time? Biden.
You did pick Biden.
Thank you. I think he's, we're going to take a break. You think he's more formidable. I think he's he makes Nixon look charming.
That's hard. He's very wooden.
I think he's charmless. He looks like he has no friends. He's Mr. Straitjacket. He literally looks like he has no friends. Like, speaking of men friends, he has no friends at all. Like,
no
that's
friends.
It. No friends. Like, and why would, and he looks uninterested in people. Like, he doesn't like people. And I'm sorry, you're not being president if you don't like people. And technocrats are fine. Just go run a state. That's great.
Let's have him and Kamala Harris on the same ticket and we'll call it brightens up a room by leaving a ticket.
I don't know. You can do better, Republicans, honestly. Anyway, let's go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Surgeon General's new warning and take a listener question about HBO's latest streaming rebrand, which Scott has a lot to say about.
Support for Pivot comes from the Optimistic Outlook podcast. What can a microgrid on Chicago's South Side teach us about the future of energy? How can we fight to make clean air a basic human right? And why are there almost a million open manufacturing jobs right now? There's only a few people in the world with the expertise, access, and perspective to give real answers to those questions. And Barbara Humpton, the CEO of Siemens USA, is one of them. On her podcast, The Optimistic Outlook, you get a seat at the table with Barbara as she shares the latest insights on breakthroughs in manufacturing technologies that are reshaping our reality. Barbara's guests include thought leaders, industry mavericks, and researchers who all share actionable information and ideas about the technologies that are creating our future. Recent episodes highlight how new technology paired with sustainability efforts has radically changed workplaces across the spectrum, from hospitals and energy plants to transportation systems. Other fascinating topics include sustainable beer brewing, the power of 3D printing, and the incredible potential of self-healing concrete. To learn more, join the dozens and dozens of people who tune into this podcast. Listen to The Optimistic Outlook wherever you consume your podcasts.
Support for Pivot comes from Pendo. Think about some experiences you've had where your review was nice enough. That restaurant down the street you heard was great, nice enough. That boutique hotel you were so excited to try, oh, nice enough, I guess. Not exactly ringing endorsements. And these days, if your brand's app experience is just nice enough, chances are you won't be keeping your users engaged the way you want to. Pendo improves the apps your customers and employees rely on. Whether you're building applications for customers or managing applications for employees, Pendo can help deliver better experiences for your users so they can get more value from your software. Pendo can also help you get answers to critical questions about how users are engaging with your app, then turn those insights into action, all in one easy-to-use platform. Visit pendo.io/pivot to learn more about how your team can use Pendo to start building better digital experiences. There, you can also check out Pendo's lineup of free certification courses, 12 hours of in-depth training for your product management teams on topics from AI to product analytics to product-led growth. That's pendo.io/pivot to learn more. Scott, we're back with our second big story. The Surgeon General says that social media may pose risk to young users. You're kidding. In a new report, Dr. Vivek Murthy says that, quote, there are ample indicators that social media can have a profound risk of harm to the mental health and well-being of children and adolescents. The report calls on tech companies to enforce age restriction and create strict default settings for young users around privacy and safety. It also calls on governments to create health and safety standards for tech platforms. However, the report didn't condemn social media use for all young people, but it did, and it didn't define what healthy social media would look like. I think a lot of people who've been in this for a while were a little bit underwhelmed, but it was long in the making. We talked to the Surgeon General on this topic in March of last year. Scott asked him about age gating specifically. Here's what he said.
Part of the challenge we have, though, Scott, and you're getting at the heart of it with your question, is that we actually need data to understand the impact on children. Right. We have some data. We have alarming rates of depression and anxiety that have increased in our kids. We have clear evidence, in fact, that the suicide rate has increased significantly in the 10 years prior to the pandemic in young people. We have record numbers of young people who are saying they feel persistent feelings of hopelessness and sadness. We know that things are getting worse for our kids.
He stopped short of calling for age. He said a lot of words, not age gating. The surgeon, which you asked him specifically about, the Surgeon General has the power to recommend, but not enforce, I guess. I think a lot of people felt he could have been stronger, I guess. Facebook responded. They had already done some of the things he suggested, like automatically setting accounts to private if a user is under 16. Your thoughts on this?
I think Surgeon General Vivek Murthy is already the most significant Surgeon General we've had in decades.
All right.
Yeah, tax companies, and usually the Surgeon General doesn't do that.
Well, cigarette.
He is attacking probably, in my estimation, what is the most dangerous emission of our time, and that is rage and loneliness from these companies. If you read the actual report, it is steeped in rigor and research. I know this personally. I mean, I'm low on the totem pole of experts around this stuff. He called me, him and his team called me several times to try and really get to the heart of these issues. Several of my colleagues have been contacted by him. He is a serious person doing serious work. He talks a lot about his own struggles with loneliness as a young man. He's a father, and it's all steeped in academia and his experience as a doctor. This is someone who is doing exactly what he is supposed to be doing. He is trying to prevent a tragedy that comes.
He's raising the thing. Your friend Jonathan Haidt did not think it was enough, for sure. Others did. You know what I mean? Like, they wanted an even stronger thing, cigarette level, I guess. And I get that.
Yeah, but he doesn't have that authority.
He has the public forum.
Yeah, and what Surgeon General has raised an issue has gotten more attention around an issue of more importance in the last 40 years.
Okay. No, I'm just telling you, a lot of people.
It's largely a symbolic position where they stand behind the president when they're actually doing things.
In their outfit. Yeah.
And then they go on to sell Life Alert. I mean, it's just, this has been a position, he is hands down addressing an issue that is difficult. He's doing it with rigor. Uh-huh. And I also think loneliness with AI, people are going to start withdrawing even further, especially young men. Yeah. And to what your son's comments were about, and he's directly saying, well, I've already parroted one of his lines. He gave me the line, people are mistaking friends for friendship. And he talks about the need for third places where we make investments in things like parks and leagues and bring people back together. And the thing I like about him is that he does stuff with grace and he errs on the side.
He is. He's a classy doctor, like myself.
He never makes personal attacks. He never, you know, tries to inflame the other side. He's just like science.
No, he's a very measured science focus.
But he's sincere. He is seen as a good actor that's earnest, that is trying to protect the well-being of our children and increase.
I think he should do this all the time and be very firm about it. I just feel like you've got to really lean into this in a heavy. If it's going to be like cigarettes, you're going to do the age gating and being a leader. You can still be a leader even if you don't have enforcement. Real, a bit like press, and a little less nice. Like, look, people, that kind of stuff. We'll see where it goes. He always does try to tend to find the middle. He seems like that kind of person. But in this case, I think he could have even more impact if he was highly specific and really waded in there, even if it's not his to wade into. And this age gating has a lot of issues. It's nuanced, and they could have more data about our kids, their IDs, birth certificates. It's different than, say, porn or cigarettes, because that's a physical thing. Kids go in and buy cigarettes. This is information, digital information online using a digital product. So speaking of regulating social media, TikTok is suing Montana, not a surprise. We said they probably would, violating the First Amendment. So are a bunch of TikTok users, First Amendment. Montana's going to lose. No proof. They shouldn't be here, as we said. But the problem for TikTok is there was a report in the Times this week says that TikTok user data is regularly shared in Slack-like tool that employees use to address user complaints. The data can include a user's driver's license and accessible to employees in China. This is the issue. Even if they're not malevolent, it seeps right through.
Yeah, but you said it. This creates unnecessary momentum for TikTok because people are busy and all they'll see is that the Supreme Court or a court, not the Supreme Court, a court overturned the decision to ban TikTok. And people say, oh, it's illegal, they shouldn't do it. And no, they'll decide that a state can't overturn a ban on media, that's a bad idea. So this was an unforced error, a purely political move by someone who should be an operator, the governor of Montana.
Yeah.
But TikTok, and I mean, it's already happening. I think Senator Warner's Restrict Act made a lot of sense. They were good actors here. And I'm worried it's losing momentum. TikTok is going to the tried and true playbook, and that is just wait them out. We're like a cat. The public and our elected officials are like a cat chasing a dot. And it's just like, wear them out. And then they'll need a nap.
And then have some dumb person like the governor of Montana do something.
So let me just reiterate. TikTok is a national security threat. It is the ultimate propaganda tool. The people running TikTok in the United States deserve to be really wealthy. They're good people who have built an amazing product. There is no sunlight between a Chinese company and the CCP. And the CCP is now running the largest streaming network that is bigger than all other streaming networks combined for people under the age of 25. And every day, our next generation of military, civic, nonprofit, and business leaders are going to feel a little shittier about America because the CCP has its thumb on any scale around content reaching our young people. It absolutely needs to be banned or spun. And we can't let up here. We can't move on to the next thing.
Exactement. Exactement, as I like to say. Exactement. I'm also a French doctor. Anyway, let us pivot to a listener question just in your wheelhouse, Scott Galloway.
You've got. I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman. You've got mail.
Hi, this is Emily from Phoenix, Arizona. I just wanted to hear Kara and Scott's take on HBO Max transforming its brand to just Max. My friends and I are making fun of this relentlessly and also just scratching our heads because the HBO brand is, in our opinion, one of the best out there, is certainly as far as television goes. So changing it to Max just seems very bizarre, and it kind of seems like what's the reason for that, and are they the stupidest company ever? So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Oh, I'm going to let you go on, but I have to say I was at CNN this week because of the DeSantis stuff. I saw the Max thing, and it doesn't look good. They took out all this stuff, and there's these big Max things everywhere. And I brought you stickers, Max stickers they had lying around. It's jarring when you see it, I have to say. And it's not jarring in a good way, like, ooh, attractive. It's, ooh, unattractive. And I actually, everybody thought that in the lobby. Everyone was like, no, this is not pleasing to me. And again, there's the Skinemax thing that we like to talk about, mm-hmm. and HBO is great. And I love that someone from Phoenix is like, are they the stupidest company? I love that these people are sitting around thinking about it. But your thoughts, Scott, you have a lot of them.
Well, I started a brand strategy firm. I've taught brand strategy for 20 years. It's hard to think of a stupider move. Brands like this take decades to build. And I have a real bias here because some of the most moving moments, I think, in the history of television, whether it's the Prince of Dorne saying, I will be your champion to Tyrion Lannister, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. the mother in 6 Feet Under looking at the photos of her family and and sobbing. I just think HBO is literally one of the core associations of a brand built over decades, is we have assembled a culture of creativity that is fearless in storytelling and moves people and creates, it is, if you were to try and embody the zeitgeist of America, cultural America over the last 40 years, somewhere in that word cloud would be the letters HB and O. Mm-hmm. And you're going to turn that into Max. And the only reasoning they can come up with is people are confused. We need something that's more literal, that explains what this actually
and HBO,
is.
We shouldn't lead with HBO. We have so many other things,
well,
right?
Okay, that's so point. Are people going to mistake The Sopranos for a show about singers? So we're going to turn it into the big mafia show? I mean, mm-hmm. it's just, this is, Matsushita is going to turn their brand name to shit?
Yeah. I had Vox. Ox.
Vox is Ox? I went crazy last night.
You did. You looked like you were like doing edibles and thinking up names. And I'm sure people will get used to it, but it's not a happy brand transition, right? Remember when Airbnb did that thing and everyone thought it looked like a vagina?
I don't remember that.
Yeah. It could go away, I guess, and you just get used to staring at the vagina.
But this is companies and organizations pray. That over several generations, they can build intangible associations of this quality and this depth.
So how did it happen? I have a feeling that David Zaslav's like, we're Discovery. Why is HBO there? I can see it coming from the top.
I think it's the majority of bad decisions in corporate America are made by guys in midlife crisis and it's ego. And this guy comes from the Discovery side of the house. And thought that Discovery was an amazing brand. And if I'm going to give up Discovery and we want something new, and not only that, we need something new that I'm the CEO of. I don't think he wants to give any credit to the guys. I mean, Wells Fargo was bought by Norwest, a boring mortgage company in Minneapolis, but they were smart enough to know if we're going to pay this kind of money, we need to go with the right brand, and they change it to Wells Fargo, right? Dayton Hudson had this little growth company called Target, and they said, you know what? Our kid is now bigger and stronger than we are. We're going to call the whole company, Target. This people don't make dumb moves like this. They go, these things are incredibly hard to build.
Why? Where do you think it's going to go? Will it matter? We'll just like hate it, just get used to it and hate it. A lot of people feel it looks like the branding, the fonts look like, women know this looks like MaxiPads ads, but go ahead.
It'll be seen as an example of where David Zaslav screwed up. The whole industry is under attack right now. So consolidation, you can understand the strategy operationally around trying to bring it all.
I can see the beginning of this conversation. I think he probably dominated it and everyone shut
and
up.
And he decided, he made this, I'll bet you anything he made this decision because any consultant.
100%.
Any consultant, anyone in the marketing department with an IQ over 80 said, shouldn't we think about it being HBO if we're only going to pick one brand? Shouldn't we go with the brand that means quality and great storytelling and then the ability to capture the moment? Instead, we're going to call it Max. I mean,
you know what they should have called it? Zazz.
Zazz. Zazz hands.
There's a song, a little bit of Zazz.
This is just literally every brand strategist. My mentor who taught me everything I know about brand strategy, David Ocker, is literally just sitting there with his head in his hands. But when Datsun became Nissan, that made absolutely no sense.
But you're used to it. Does it ultimately, you're a brand person, ultimately people get used to it, right? They'll be like, oh, it's Max, right?
Yeah, but it's like ultimately they get used to a shittier product. I mean, it's just, this is, he basically took HBO. If you had $10 billion and you tried to recreate a brand like HBO, you probably couldn't do it. It'd be 1 in 10 chance you could do it. So he's taken tens of billions of dollars, or at least billions in equity, and he's taken it into the street and created a fire to warm his ego.
Yeah.
Because he didn't invent HBO. He invented something else. This is whenever you can always really brain dead moves can always be reverse engineered to a guy in his 50s or his 60s who is making a decision from ego, not from business or shareholder value. This is one of those moves. This is one of those decisions where I actually think a board should not dictate strategy. They should, generally speaking, not get involved in operations. But someone on the board who actually understands branding and assets
should say,
you're taking billions of dollars and you're immolating it. What are you doing?
And Disney would never do this, you know. They would, and by the way, they have a name, Marvel. If you change theirs to Marvel, you'd be, that was going to be the name of the of MSN back in the day, by the way. But they have names that would be good too, but they would never do this. Like Marvel's a good name for something like this.
No, they understand brand.
And, they wouldn't.
And they wouldn't have a new CEO who came in from Lucasfilm and go, we're going to call it THX or something. They would just never do that.
No.
But this is, this will go down as one of the great brand disasters.
You know, Discovery would have been a better name than Max, honestly.
Agreed.
There's,
agreed.
I don't know. Anyway, except Discovery, you think of Guy Fieri. That's pretty much what you think about.
Is that right? I think of sharks.
You think of sharks. Anyway.
I just want to give David Zaslav some credit. I think he is really helping the mental health of Americans, because what he's saying to every American is, I'm not, you know, you're not the only one that makes really expensive mistakes.
Yes, you're not and the only Elon one. Musk, we've seen
my
that.
Favorite
this week.
Also, they already realized they fucked up. They posted on Twitter and Instagram a big logo that says, introducing Max. And then right below it, it says, the one to watch for HBO. It's like, they've
also,
already realized they fucked up.
Creators are getting mad too because of the way they're phrasing it and stuff like that. They're changing different things. There's a whole controversy around that. Maybe we'll talk about it next week. You know, even Amanda was like, she turned it on and it offended her. She was watching Succession episode 9 and she's like, I was just offended by the font. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that. I want HBO. It was funny.
HBO. There'll be case studies written for decades, and not only around brand, but around culture. Yeah. HBO was a 120-pound, you know, flyweight that was beating, you know, Larry Holmes. They could take it. They were spending $2 or $3 billion a year, while Netflix was spending 17.
Yeah.
And what are we talking about around the water cooler? We're talking about Succession and Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
And
do you know what HBO stands for, of course? Because my family was one of the
famous companies.
Home box office.
Yeah. And it was a self-expressive benefit. My dad used to brag. I remember at cocktail parties when my dad was trying to like sleep with all the other wives at the party, he would say, oh, well, we only watch HBO. Like that made him a baller. That was his big that was his big thing.
He didn't say home box office.
No, well, at the Galloway household, we'll only watch HBO. And it's that's going to get her.
It used to just be movies.
Yeah.
It used to just be shitty movies when it started. I remember it because we had it on our cable.
You don't remember? I love it. The Mind of the Married Man and then the Gary Shandling show.
Yeah, Gary Shandling. They had some really good stuff.
God.
They were like
Hank?
Early Fox. Remember Early Fox Network? That kind of stuff. It was good. It was really good.
Rest in peace, HBO.
Rest in peace.
Let's change the name of our podcast to HBO. That's what we should do.
God, that'd be good. Here we are, the doctors on HBO.
Dr. HBO. Let's do that.
The one thing that I have to say, Black, Blue, Jude, Wrong, and several is all the different HBO streaming services. HBO Go, HBO Now,
HBO Joey Max. Bag of Donuts.
Yeah, I know.
HBO they Light.
I used to call them a joke. I'm like, what's the name today?
It was HBO really Plus. Oh, my God.
Max was a good name. Anyway, if you've got a question of your own, that was a very good session there. If you got a, David, call us. Call Scott and Kara. The doctors are in. Anyway, if you've got a question of your own and like answered, send it our way and go to nymag.com to submit a question for the show or call 855-51-PIVOT. We love a voice question. Thank you, Emily from Phoenix, Arizona. Great question. All right, Scott, one more quick break. We'll be back for predictions.
Hi, we're Visible. We're the wireless company with nothing to hide. Seriously. Hidden fees? We don't have them. Annual contracts? Not our thing. Great wireless on just one line? Now that's more like it. Get unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month. Taxes and fees included. That's right, $25 a month every month. Sorry, hidden fees. We're just not that into you. Sometimes the choice is just Visible. Switch today at Visible.com. Rate with service on the Visible plan. For additional terms and network management practices, see Visible.com.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. you can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Okay, Scott, let's hear a prediction. You said you had one, you were saving it, or maybe you have a new one.
My prediction is, after listening to the shit show last night that was the presidential announcement or the candidacy of Governor DeSantis, and we're speaking on stage at Cannes, which I'm really excited about.
Yes, we are. We need a friend of Pivot. I did ask Linda Yaccarino.
Well, my prediction is around Linda.
Yeah.
Okay. And just to ensure Linda does, I'm not sure Linda's going to come on stage with us now, but I don't think there was ever any chance she was going to come on stage.
Yeah. I probably shouldn't, Linda, but you should.
I will tell, and I'm committing to this, every CMO in the room, and this is really essentially, you know, the Cannes Creativity Festival is kind of like a contest around, let's give awards to the advertising that sucks the least.
Yeah.
And let's, you know, we're all pilots.
But it's in France and there's rosé.
We're all pilots on a 747 for Pan Am and we think we're important, but let's be honest, our days are numbered. And let's go to a party hosted by our executioners, Google and Meta on the beach. But what I will say to every CMO in the room, and we will get a ton of them, and I'm speaking in a couple places, and I will repeat this, that the fastest way between a CMO and an unceremonious exit is to advertise on Twitter. This is an individual running this company who threatened to sue advertisers who left, that when an individual sells his stock, says he hates humanity, is subscale, clearly has all sorts of technology issues, but they want to get advertisers to advertise on Twitter. So if you're a CMO, literally on a risk-adjusted basis, the stupidest thing you can do, you would be better off starting a meth addiction in terms of your own professional trajectory than advertising on Twitter. And this goes to my prediction. She is pushing a rock up a hill that is going to get bigger and heavier every day. She will be blamed for not restoring the ad revenue that he has recklessly alienated. And she will be she will leave or be fired within 12 months. This is the mother of
Linda,
all.
Linda, come on stage with us, please.
This is the mother. Well, let me get this. I might sue you if you advertise and then leave. I might threaten to sue you. I might say that you individually, I'm not scared to go after people less powerful than me and use the population of the UK and Germany to say that you're a sex criminal if you do something
or the doctor is shrill.
But advertise with us and she will be blamed for it. She will.
They're going to give her a chance, though. They like her. She's very well liked. She's
90. Yeah. And he's such a loyal guy. Yeah. She will be blamed for not accomplishing an impossible task. Mm-hmm. And that is to get people out to advertise on something that was always subscale, but now it's subscale and toxic and dangerous for people's careers. Mm-hmm. And they will hold her responsible and she will leave. And attempting to be
I'll tell you what's more important, Scott. The numbers aren't very good. Like, let's get away from wokeness and he's obnoxious. If it worked, they do it, right? The numbers aren't good. That's all. It's not an effective advertising platform.
But that's where he will place the blame, is on Linda Yaccarino.
Yeah, he will.
He won't say, Linda, I give you an impossible task. What can I do to be helpful? I'll tone it down. What can I do to help score advertisers? He's just going to make her life impossible and then hold her responsible for what an awful job she has.
Yeah, I would love to know what's going on inside her head.
In addition, she's not the CEO. She's the COO.
Yeah,
I'm going to handle product and strategy. She's going to handle business and revenue, meaning I need someone to blame. That's what he said. I need someone to blame.
I mean, she did walk into this, and I think she thinks he's less terrible than he seems.
She was smart to take the job. Even if it doesn't work out, I didn't know who Linda Yaccarino was. I mean, I run advertising for NBC Universal. Great. Is there anyone else here I can speak to?
Yeah. No, I get it. She wanted to raise
12
her profile.
12 months. And she should. Let's timestamp this. Right. 12 months
right.
or less.
12 months. All right. Okay.
She has
we'll
been,
see.
Literally, this is the mother of all. Let's pour honey on her and send her hunting for bears. I mean, God.
That's a visual. She's a tough lady. We'll see. But they didn't do a good job for her.
That's the platform I want to advertise on. They don't understand technology, and they might humiliate me in front of 120 million people. Yes, take my money.
I wonder which presidential candidates will do it. They'll be like, no, I don't think so. I'll just go on Fox News.
I think after seeing what happened, where the black hole of attention Elon Musk couldn't resist, the technology issues, all of the negative press they're getting, I mean, people will go on the platform.
Yeah.
But they're not.
I can't believe I said this in my long tweet storm was just hand it over to Tucker Carlson. He knows how to do media. He does. He puts on a good show. Even I hate the show. It's a good show.
Several years ago, right when I was just getting into podcasting, I heard from Andrew Yang's people saying, Andrew really wants to come on your show and talk about his candidacy.
Oh, he'll go on.
For presidency. And I remember I wrote back and said, the fact that he wants to be on my podcast totally makes him an illegitimate candidate, in my view. And by the way, I got to know Andrew.
He had a moment.
And we become friends. And I think he's a good man. And I think he's had a positive impact on the world of politics. For the first time, people are actually considering some form of UBI.
Yeah.
I don't think the child tax credit would have gotten anywhere without him creating cloud cover around UBI. I think he's a good man. But I remember, he was literally, the medium, you summarized it perfect. The medium is the message here. And the medium yesterday was a fucking shit show.
Shit show.
And so the message
was, this sucks.
The message was the message. This just doesn't work.
This doesn't work. Yeah. Yeah. And also look at Elon over here. Anyway,
do you
Ron,
have a prediction?
I do not.
You
I
do
don't
not?
Know. I do not. I do not have, although I was right about it being a shit show. I forgot. I have another right one.
Linda Yaccarino is going to come on the show. After she resigns.
After she leaves.
And it's going to be a great show.
And Linda, we'll help you get a job. We know everybody.
She's a talented woman. She's going to be fine.
We will help you get a job.
I'm already talking about her as if she's already been, she's already left.
We'll see. We'll see. As they say on Succession, it's a knife fight in the mud. Life is a knife fight in the mud. By the way, I'll have a prediction. The end of Succession is going to be a big viewership.
I can't handle it. It's too emotionally traumatic.
I have two podcasts on it. That's how good it is. Two.
Yeah. Is this week the...
Sunday,
It's done? Mm-hmm. It's over?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I don't know how they could do any more surprises. Are Shiv and Tom going to strangle each other? I have to skip through.
I'm not saying a word. I say no words.
People should not be that mean to each other. And also, as someone, light of my life, when I know your father's passing had a big impact on you, my mother said, it's getting a little much. He's dead. Just put him in the ground. It's getting a little much.
It's getting a little rancid.
It's getting a little much. He didn't like you. He wasn't nice to you. Put him in the ground and start spending his money.
I have to say, I love all the speculation. And the funniest one was the person who said, Tom and Shiv are going to have a baby and Cousin Greg is going to imprint on it, like the end of Twilight.
No, it's going to be Rosemary's baby. It's going to be the spawn of Satan.
There's no baby. This is a week happening. There's no baby happening. It's a week.
I might fast forward. Who knows?
By the way,
greatest series finale in history. In history.
What?
Was on HBO. It was the season or the series finale of 6 Feet Under.
I agree.
That was
a
masterpiece.
Kick in the fucking gut, wasn't it?
A masterpiece.
The Sia song. Ugh.
And the only way they could match that is if they fast forward and Cousin Greg is the CEO of Waystar and banging models and doing blow off the ass of really, really hot, male and female prostitutes. I am so here for that. HBO.
I can't believe.
H to the B to the O, bitches. HBO.
I cannot believe that you and I agree on the best finale. That's true. And also, by the way, rest in peace, Tina Turner. And we agree on her greatest song, What's Love Got to Do With It?
Although I will say, It's Only Love with Bryan Adams.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus. They were
everything.
His voice contrasted with hers.
Everything she did. I listened to Tina Turner 1 year when that big album came out. That she got sort of revived again. And I lived in New York, and I listened to it on play and play and play again. And I just love Tina Turner.
Also a decent actress, Mad Max, I think it was Beyond Thunderdome.
Thunderdome. And just a cool person. If you look at, there's a lot of interviews showing up with her online, and they're all fantastic. She's just hysterically funny. Yeah. She was with Mike Wallace at her beautiful estate. She had an estate in the south of France where we'll be, not at the estate. And it was gorgeous. She had an infinity pool overlooking the Riviera. And he goes, do you deserve this? I think he says this to her, which is kind of a weird question.
Do you deserve this?
But she handles it so beautiful. And she goes, I deserve more. And just the way she did it was quiet and like, fuck you, dude.
Well, you know who bought that estate out of probate already?
Who?
David Zaslav.
He's probably throwing the party. He's there now in Cannes. He's there now with
By the way, what's the chance I'm going to get offered another CNN show right now?
Not at all. Not even slightly. Zero.
I'm entirely serious. We're going to have a conversation after this. We are changing the name of our podcast to HBO.
Read us out. Just leave us out. Do not say HBO once more. Read us out.
Today's show was produced by Lara Neiman, Evan Engel, and Taylor Griffin. Ernie Dertot engineered this episode. Thanks also to Drew Burrows and Emil Saverio. Make sure you subscribe to the show wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks for listening to Pivot from New York Magazine and Vox Media. We'll be back next week for another breakdown of all things tech and business. Be sure to tune in to Girls, to Game of Thrones, to The Wire, and to Pivot from HBO.
That's good. That's good.